I didn't make a big mistake here. So he started as a project engineer at Oxford Instruments in the 80s and actually continued his full career there for 30 years, working his way up to a strategic business development manager. And just last year, Ziad started his own consultancy firm, which is called Oxford Quantum Solutions. His 32 years of experience includes a wide variety of technologies. He worked on product and business development for cryogenics, quantum applications, nanotechnology, applied superconductivity, as well as low and high temperature superconducting materials. And that's actually how I learned about, let's say, Ziad. He was speaking at a conference. It was either applied superconductivity or magnet technology, sometime 2012. It was pretty early in my career. And I think that was the first time I saw you speak. And the topic was HTS for spherical tokamaks. And I remember just being so in awe at the hardware that you were showing, the technology you were discussing, and it really motivated me. And I thought, you know, this is why I'm an engineer, is a real world practical application of a technology that was developed by and for sort of high energy physics accelerator community, which can have a huge impact. And this was so energizing to me as I realized that there were broader implications for the work that I was doing. And so that's why I thought it would be good to have Ziad come this year and give the keynote, because I think so often when we're working in R&D, we're so focused on the small problem that we're trying to solve that we sort of lose sight of the bigger picture and like the why we're doing this. So it's my hope today that Ziad, his talk on the strategic approach to broaden the use of superconductivity in the society, as well as the potential impact on a cleaner, healthier, and sustainable future, can help to remind us all that the work we do on a daily basis here at Fermilab may eventually help to save our planet. So with that, I'll hand it over to Ziad.
Thank you, Milena, for this very kind introduction. And I mean, the fact that my background in theoretical physics allowed me really to work on these diverse applications. So, and for many of our customers, work on nano devices and high energy physics. And none of them probably know my background in theoretical physics. So I know a bit more about the technology more than they realize. And that helped me a lot in dealing with many of the challenges of developing products for commercialization. As you mentioned, Melanie, I've been working over 30 years in commercial environment, and I joined to work on high field product at Oxford Instruments. And in the technical, like many of you engineers, I've been spending the first part of my life at Oxford as an engineer working on mainly strategic projects, the high field project and quantum projects, and then moved on to strategic business development and partnership and collaboration. And today is now I'm having this freedom to work on outside a commercial company, but for my consultancy company, I'm focusing on how to really take these smart materials like superconductors into more day-to-day activities. So I'm helping businesses how they can develop a concept and make a product, not to do a research, not to do a technology. That's something is given. We have to do it. But how to help businesses, how really we can take a concept, any concept, and make a product. And that's what the beauty of what we have done at Oxford. And so diverse concepts has been taken and developed into a commercial product. And many of you know how difficult to make money out of science. So today I will focus on how we can collectively approach the next phase of use of superconducting technologies outside the research lab, outside the discovery, material discovery, and from MRI into more day-to-day, I call end-user activities. And I will share with you the challenge, what the challenge we are facing going forward, give you a brief overview, and then mention a little bit about superconducting materials, a little bit about market analysis, and then I will focus on the opportunities and give you a concluding remarks. So really the challenge is, many of you have seen over the last 2-3 years, the diverse environmental challenge, the climate challenge. And they are coming more frequent. They are coming more devastating and extreme. I mean, I haven't put here a picture for you, but in the last week, England saw 3 storms within 4 days. And that's very unusual. The last time England have seen such a single storm was 1986. So these are getting more frequent, they are getting more devastating, and a lot of, I mean, luckily not many people died, but there's a lot of damage and flooding. And nowadays, if you come to Oxford, the River Thames is flooded, certain areas under the water. And you have seen what California, and I think the best one I would like to share with you out of this one is United Arab Emirates in the desert. And in last July, it has flooding in the summer, which is very unusual. So these are real challenges. And so we need new innovations in terms to address the decarbonization. COP26 happened last year here in Glasgow, and they came with very brave targets to reduce reduce the emission and by 1.5 degrees to lead to 1.5 degree by 2050. And that's a very aggressive target. I don't believe we can achieve that with the current technologies we have. If you look at, so I will share some of the figures I have. I don't believe that the materials or the technologies we have will address currently the 250 targets. So in itself, it's an opportunity for superconducting technologies to really to meet the challenge of providing the next phase of technologies, which is, to me, is a very smart, very beautiful material. It has the potential and has demonstrated the capability to deliver state-of-the-art performance beyond conventional materials. So, and the other factor is in 2015, the United Nations came out with the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. So I don't know if some of you have probably have seen this one. There are 17 of these. And these 17 address poverty, address quality of life, health, energy, climate, and so on. And if you look at these sustainable goals, you could cluster them into certain outcomes. The first one is net zero emission, then healthy and resilient and biodiverse environment, safe and sustainable and productive water resources, sustainable affordable energy, services, productive and effective management, quality of life, reduced impact of major bushfires and other emergencies on people, property, and environment. And if you cluster all these together, you come out with five of them are directly will benefit from superconducting technologies. And indirectly, two of them will benefit indirectly from the result of these technologies. So together, superconducting for energy, for example, generation and power management, for medical diagnostics, medical treatment, and drug discovery, and for the superconducting for the digital age. I think these are the three areas where superconducting will make a big impact in the coming decade and so on. We need it. We at the moment, people use MRI body scanners as a given. For the last 40 years, you go to hospital and if you have a problem, the only way that your physician can confirm what they need to do is by having an MRI. We do that very frequently. Now, you could, before MRI, people were using X-ray. And if imagine yourself, you need an MRI image, you need probably over 1,000 X-ray image shots. And you will not last more than 10 x-rays. Hence, MRI has made a step change in our healthcare. And it made a lot of improvement on the way people are treated. Cancer, for example, has been benefited from that. NMR technologies relying on high field systems has benefited from superconducting magnets, which allow discovery of new drugs, including the COVID. If COVID vaccine was partially analyzed using, in fact, one of the gigahertz systems done by Bruker. So we are seeing the impact of these new devices enabled by superconducting technologies. And now many of you are aware of this digital age and superconducting computing, quantum computing, and the promise of quantum computing will be really enabled by superconducting technology, among other technologies. The other one I want to share with you, these are real real estimates by these studies done here by Bloomberg last year, and showing what the generation, the electricity generation, the global electricity generation over the years, from 1970 to 20, showing how it was coal till recently, and then the gas taking over from the coal, and then the oil, and then the nuclear, and the hydro. And we start to see the emergence of what we call renewables, the wind farm, the solar, and other, like batteries, for example. And you could see that the emergence of the renewables, and currently we are nowhere close to what more than really is 50% of the energy coming from renewables now. Hydro is a big chunk of it. And the challenge is that by 2050, renewables with, and this is a forecast, and there are some challenges in achieving these forecasts, but still will not address more than 70% of our need for decarbonization. Even with the best efforts and with the best estimates, we will not achieve more than 70%. Hence, for example, we see fusion is a potential to cover this fossil need. And now if you look at the estimated investment in electricity generation, again, these figures came by analysis by Bloomberg and McKinsey, showing about $20 trillion will be invested by 2050 on electricity generation. 30% of that will be $6.6 trillion on fusion, or equivalent to fusion, or replacing the fossil. And that's massive market. Hence, you can see why private equity are dumping money on Commonwealth Fusion Systems or Tokamak Energy, because they can see that it's not just simply because it's a beautiful technology, but also it has commercial benefit. And really, these are the challenges we have to deal with. It's how we come out with smart solutions which will address our society needs without impacting the environment. Here, I'm showing here recent results, again, done by the International Energy Authority, and showing literally actual data, global change in excess demand between 2015 to 22. And then the generation. And on the left-hand side, what I'm showing is basically how the China demand is always above the highest among all the nations. And on the right-hand side, I'm showing how the coal has dipped in the between 2016 to 2019. But now in the last 2 years, we have seen more of the generation coming from coal, which telling me is renewables, so much investment in renewables, still not addressing the needs of our demand. And I'm expecting, I'm even in the UK this year, they switch on a coal fire station. They stopped all of them, but this year they switched it off. So even the, and now there's a big crisis in terms of oil and gas. It's $100 per barrel, for example. And that would even put more pressure on electricity generation to use conventional power station. So you can see the challenges we are going to face. And my expectation on the right-hand side, this yellow versus green, will even become more bigger. It's not showing increase in demand, but also the way it has been addressed. So this is why these are the challenges. And there's you can spend even 2 hours talking about these challenges. But what I will do now, move into my superconducting element of the talk, which is showing how over the 100 years, from theoretical physics discovery into a commercial product, and done here in Oxford by Martin Wood. And we have now a well-established commercial product, MRI body scanners, which is really used as a commodity nowadays. And then a lot of R&D activities with a lot of promise. It's already led superconducting to over 25 Nobel laureates in superconducting application, cryogenic and quantum technologies. And really, the diversity of the application is enormous. I'm showing here selective examples of prototypes or developments has been done using superconducting materials. And the majority of them is in the top research and medical magnets. That's where most of the applications, that's where most 90% over is even 95% of the materials superconducting used in that field. Medical MRI and high energy physics are still the leading players in superconducting applications. Fusion is picking up. We have ITER now, which is took almost 10 years to develop the coils, but now we have the private companies going into using HTS. And the rest are examples of potential of superconducting. There are two barriers for moving into power applications. First of all, the materials are expensive, the cryogenic packaging, and utilities are very conservative. They want really a system which will work without any interruption. So you need to develop solutions which have a complete redundancy in it. And these applications are getting more attention with the development of high temperature superconductors. So to move into materials, this is an example of what the journey of superconducting materials from a nano material at the latest stage to a filament, to a wire, to a cable of about 50 millimeter and to a large magnet. It showed this, its capability of being developed in high volume and high quality to be used in these advanced solutions. So there is a lot of advancement happened over the last 60 years in translating a new innovation in smart materials into large and advanced applications. There are over 5,000 superconducting materials being discovered over the last, 100 years. In the last 50 years, majority of them, most of the research done in the last 50, 60 years. And it took over 50 years to see the first commercial superconducting material, the niobium titanium, in 1962. Then in 1986, we saw the discovery of oxides and the high temperature superconductors with a lot of promise. And nowadays we see the interest in nictides as well, ion nictides. And the main driver for that is cost, is how to make these materials affordable so that people can use them in day-to-day applications. Out of these 5,000 materials, only 6 practical useful for engineers. So these are low temperature superconductors, mainly niobium titanium and niobium tin. If the favorite to use niobium titanium, it will take you to 10 Tesla at 4K and very cheap compared to others. It's $1 per kilo and meter at say 8 Tesla. Then niobium tin, which is if you want to go higher than 10 Tesla, as you see now, and the whole LHC cell experiment was done using niobium titanium. To upgrade it, you need a new material. Niobium tin is under consideration, but also high temperature superconductor. And then magnesium diboride, to me, is not a high temperature superconductor. It is in what I call medium, allow you to go to a high operating temperature, but not high field. So it's useful for low field applications. And then you have the high temperature superconductor, which can take you to high operating temperature with high operating current. And this is the promise we have nowadays. We also start to see interest in developing a new materials toward the room temperature. So the quest for new materials hasn't stopped. And although we have the EPCO and the ionectides taking us between 50 and 90 K, there is a lot of interest going to room temperature. And last year, a German group have demonstrated room temperature superconductors, but at very high pressure, 267 gigapascal. So it's good for the lab, for the our understanding, but really the challenge to make practical material out of it is still a long journey to do that. Another challenge we are facing is up till say 20 years ago, all superconducting applications required helium. Hence, you will find them very popular in research labs. Research labs can afford having helium part of their budget, and not just in research lab, but also in big cities. If you don't work in a rich research lab, or if you don't work on a rich environment or big city, it's difficult to get helium. Hence, it's making it difficult to make any application using helium. So even, for example, Dubai, which is one of the fastest growing countries at the moment, if you want to use a helium application, you have to order and get it in 2 weeks' time. So these are the challenges, the real challenges how for superconducting, how to take it into the end user applications. Supply of helium is a challenge because it's a byproduct of oil and gas wells. And currently the demand is exceeding the supply. Hence, every year we are seeing 20-30% increase in the price of helium. And that's, again, put a pressure and limit on use of these superconducting applications because cryogenic is all can be up to 20-30% of the cost of the system. So all these pressures on helium supply, and if you think about MRI only using 20% of helium supply, whereas welding is 17%, for example, and purging 6%, and laboratory is 10%. And I think the best one I heard about is birthday parties and lifting balloons, 8%, which is sure that these are big demand on use of helium. Hence, the price will go up and supply will always be under pressure. And I think currently Qatar, Algeria, and Russia are the only new suppliers of helium. And if you look at this bottom left-hand side, if the helium demand doesn't change at all, we will be in a real challenge by 2024. If the demand goes up by 1.5%, that's it. We are basically in trouble. But if you 3% demand, you're already basically unable to provide the needs of helium. And these are, and if all practitioners like you aware of that challenge. So in the last 15 years, a cryogenic free solution start to be developed. But currently they are employed in support for MRI systems and for lab environment like research and quantum technologies, but at not large scale. And that's an area where to enable future superconducting technologies, you need to find packaging for cryogenic to make it affordable and portable. Here I'm going to show the map, the landscape of superconducting technologies. This is showing temperature function of field. And you could see at the bottom left, the neoptanium operating between 4 to 10 Kelvin up to 10 Tesla, 12, 11 Tesla. Then you have 10 magnesium diboride in one form as a cable. BISCO-2212 and BISCO-223, the first generation of superconductors and EPCO. You could see the benefit. So if you are, if you need to work in a high field environment up to 23 Tesla, you need to go to use niobium 10, niobium 10 and high temperature superconductors. If you want to work on low field environment and moderate field above 40K, you can start to use IBCO. And if you want to go to industrial transport or low field above 40K for research and medical and power materials, you can use IBCO. So that takes me to the market analysis. And if I look at the estimated market growth using LTS and HTS, the orange one corresponds to MRI and MR. This is commercial. The blue one is research and development, and that's include okay, can you see it now? Can you see the cursor? So you can see the blue one is R&D, and that's most like high energy physics, like research labs. That's what they will be using. Roughly, the total market is about you would say between $9-10 billion a year. And the expectation, you could see here the expectation that the R&D percentage, I'm showing here the percentages. So I'm expecting within 10 years, the overall market will be doubling. That's my expectation, based on the current spending. Because most of the R&D spending comes from government, and most of the MRI based on the pricing and the forecast is basically having steady growth. So you could see the percentage of MRI basically will increase about 5-6% a year. That's how roughly MRI would be increasing every year. And if you look at the emerging market, which are basically power application and fusion, you'll start to see steady increase, and I'm expecting almost 40% to 50% of the market will be coming out for emerging applications. The other one to give you indication of the superconducting landscape is the patents landscape. So I'm sharing here the IP landscape over the last 20 years. The green ones correspond to patents which has been granted. The blue ones, these are applications. And you can see the steady, and in 2018 and 19, we've seen an accelerated development of new IP and superconducting driven by quantum technologies and by power applications. And then we had COVID and it's dropped down. And that's the nature of the game. And if you look at the landscape of these IP, it's very striking. It's still at the technology level. It's not at the product level. So if you look at the preparation method, magnetic field, superconducting wire, Josephson junction, liquid nitrogen, heat exchanger. And this is striking that over 50,000 patents, they are still really focusing on the technology. And there's a need to take this into an end user application. And the main barrier is funding. Leading patents were, I found that in magnetic field, superconducting wire and magnet manufacturing and electric devices. These are the dominant one. So in terms of expected emerging superconducting markets, and by 2030, I'm expecting fusion will be leading it, electric planes, and I will touch on these in a minute. Superconducting magnetic storage and renewables, high field, quantum computing, superconducting electronics, and medical diagnostic therapy. And it will be increased by more than, all these emerging markets will increase by more than 10 billion by 2030. So here I will move into my third part of my talk on opportunities. In the nanotechnology, we start to see the emergence of applications running at cryogen-free systems up to 16 Tesla, and also running up to 30 Tesla at research labs, but Bruker is offering now 28 gigahertz completely running at 2 Kelvin. So you start to see superconducting with high temperature superconducting components start to enable going to a new regime above 20-23 Tesla. And they are very critical for material research. Graphene was discovered using high field superconducting magnet, quantum Hall effect, spin qubits. Without these superconducting devices, we couldn't discover all these smart materials. And the journey going at the moment, there's a lot of programs, you probably, some of you are aware of them, going to higher field up to 50 or 60 Tesla for the superconducting. In quantum applications, there's over the last 2 years, we've seen acceleration of investment and interest in superconducting quantum computing. All the big players, industrial players, are focusing on superconducting qubits. There are other types like ion traps and nitrogen frequencies and spinning qubits, which are have a lot of potential. But in terms of scaling up to a commercial product, the big industrials are bidding their money on superconducting qubits, and IBM is literally committing itself to 1,000 qubits in 2023-24. Google is committing themselves to 1 million qubit by 2029, which I think is aggressive, but it showed that there's a lot of interest, and superconducting will enable the first superconducting computing for commercial applications. Another area where superconducting enabled is how to take these smart sciences from the lab outside the lab. This is an excellent example of a technique which only used by physicists and scientists to understand and measure to high accuracy the performance of certain materials, dependent on quantum Hall effects. And this has been now the standard technique for calibrating resistances. So all these supply of resistors, you buy them for so diverse application has to be calibrated against a master resistor, which has to be calibrated using quantum Hall effect. And to do that, you have to go to NIST in the US or an NPL in the UK or PTB in Germany or, and so on. National lab only afford these facilities. In the last few years, this has been converted into a cryogen-free system using graphene, which allowed taking this technique outside the lab into industrial application. And that will make a fundamental change in developing small devices, which will rely on resistors measured to accurate values. Quantum sensing is another emerging activity where we can see that it will become $500 million business by 2026. Again, superconducting electric devices enabling a new class of advanced tools for healthcare with a decent market in 5 years from now. And that's happening now at the moment. There's a few companies can offer it at the moment. And my expectation, this will grow much faster now with a quantum initiatives supporting these activities. These are very critical for treating certain challenges in our brains, I start to show its impact on the healthcare. Quantum communication, again, using superconducting cables, enabling communication between two systems. For example, they could be a quantum radar or it could be a quantum computer, where you could communicate at sub 50 millik using superconducting cable ensure that you have the accurate measurements either for communication or for clustering quantum computers together. Moving to healthcare, the healthcare has moved quite significantly over 40 years and now we almost have over over 40,000 MRI installed worldwide. It's figures of production around 4,000 per year, with a business 5-6 billion euro per year market. And this is the dominant of superconducting application. For the engineer, it's a commodity. You buy it, certain performance. And we start to see the emergence of a new high field system, 3 Tesla. Currently, a third of all new MRI sold are 3 Tesla, and 2/3, 1.5 Tesla. Because they provide better better imaging. And for research, Saclay just installed the 11.7 Tesla, and I've seen some results from that device. It's amazing the quality they are providing, especially for brain. This is a byproduct of large scale commercialization of MRI. That over 40 years, helium was a challenge, and refilling of helium was really interrupting the access to these MRI systems. So in the late 90s, cryocoolers were introduced to extend the life of the helium in a system. And now it's been mastered so much that currently you serve as an MRI, not because of the helium, but because of the service of your mechanical cryocooler. Every year you do it. You don't do it because you are short of helium. Whereas before the use of these cryocoolers, they used to fill it sometimes every week, sometimes every month, depends on their use. And that's basically showing that how this became, now cryocoolers became a major industrial component. And that's exactly what we need for packaging these superconducting technologies, to have the cryogenic packaging to allow the portability and the acceptability of these superconducting solution in industrial environment. The other benefits of MRI, it's enabled stable and cost-effective supply of neodymium wires. The scale-up of a large volume production of neodymium was carried because of the need of MRI systems. And the new cryogen-free system at the moment are being extended to other applications up to say 15 Tesla or 20 Tesla. So MRI is a very good example of superconducting use in a commercial environment, which is the industry, the engineering has adapted its techniques and capabilities so that becomes basically acceptable and user-friendly. NMR, again, we start to see that measure of high field systems. UK, Japan, and Europe have been leaning on that, and Bruker now offering 28 Tesla, 1.2 gigahertz NMR, fully superconducting. And that will open a new class of drugs and drugs research, especially for Alzheimer's disease, for brain strokes, for dementia, cancer, and so on. A new emerging activity using superconducting is medical therapy treatment for, especially for cancer blood clots. And these are currently starting to emerge, and HTS will offer the opportunity to have these compact and more cost effective. High energy physics, you are close to it more than anyone else, but there's a plan for the future collider, which is currently planned to have over 20 billion euro. And the quest is at the moment to design something which at least provides 16 Tesla using niobium 10. But probably 20 Tesla using high temperature superconductors. And I think this is going to be very exciting for high energy physics to discover a new, to improve our understanding of the standard model. And there are some challenges, is how to provide the cost of these materials, the length of the conductors, the operation, and the materials availability. That will put a lot of pressure. But even this, investment in HTS, it's going to be on the large scale and long-term project is not enough to really to fast track HTS development and cost reduction. So a critical development demonstrating performance of your superconducting materials and technologies, but not enough to scale up the commercialization. China is having a different approach. They are developing completely new materials, iron nictide, because they think they can do it cheaper. And they have done some progress with that. And they think they can do a large collider, a proton-proton collider for 50 billion. But it's very dependent on really nictide material at the moment. And assuming this will happen. But it showed that this has a potential to provide a new class of superconducting material, which will be cheaper than neodymium if it is realized. On fusion, everyone knows about ITER. It's going in its final stage of commissioning. Assembly of various coils is in progress. And this massive international project, 15 billion or 20 billion, whatever the cost you talk about depends. Is at last start to see and being realized. It's a massive project which has all the whole community benefit from it in terms of scaling up, in terms of engineering, in terms of demonstrating what I call by associated materials like a high stress material, high cryogenic and thermal management, instrumentation, diagnostics, has provided a major impact into the development of these solutions. And definitely the private companies now building on that. So the private fusion companies are using the learning from ITER to start spin out companies which will allow commercialization of superconducting technologies. So the idea of about superconducting fusion devising high temperature superconductor is based on increasing the field. Low temperature superconductors will, like ITER or DEMO, will not allow us to go more than 11, 12, or 13 Tesla on these devices, including the DEMO. And that will really limit the size and the power you get out of these devices. So HTS enabling, taking us to 20 plus Tesla performance will allow reduction, serious reduction So these are we have two now, a few companies are now start to develop fusion devices using HTS and Commonwealth Fusion System at MIT and Tokamak Energy here in Oxford, and both are promising to offer us commercial devices by 2030. I want to show here an example of the ARC machine by Commonwealth MIT to scale to the size of human. Being, and this is the offshore wind has been developed using conventional superconductors by GE, and showing the size, the enormous size of the wind farm in terms of location and huge volume, providing 12 megawatt with 60% capacity, whereas a spark fusion, an arc fusion device will provide 200 megawatt with 90% capacity for the same volume. Just show the potential of superconducting into our applications. I'm running out of time, so I will go into my third part of our application and then technology readiness. Here I'm showing basically the TRL-11 and showing that when you are close between 6 and 9, you are ready to start to commercialize. 7, 8, you are demonstrating the commercial performance, and then you start to sell it 8 and 9. And currently you can buy a superconductor for current limiter. You can buy a cable at substrate, you can develop something. And we have transformers, SMEs, and generators at the early stage of development. EcoSwing, a project which has been completed in Europe 2 years ago, has demonstrated the potential from wind farms. You could see the size of these wind farms that you can get a conventional one, which can really has been replaced with superconducting one and can provide 10 megawatt in much smaller footprint. Storage systems, again, another example of various prototypes is waiting to be exploited. And here I'm showing how SMIS regarded compared with other storage systems represent the best performer in terms of charging and longevity of performance. These are some examples of transmission cables. There's over 70 transmission cables installed worldwide now, 20 in the US, 20 in Europe, 20 in South Korea, and more than 10. I couldn't find a list in China more. I think it's more than 10. I'd show these are happening, and the lengths are starting to go from 100 meter to few miles now long. This is showing the commercial benefit of using superconducting high voltage transmission lines. And here on the right-hand side, superconducting one, and the left-hand side showing the life cycle cost significantly cheaper, but it still have the barrier that is relying on a $10 per kiloamp per meter for an HTS tape. And really, if you talk to any HTS supplier, they would say that they to go to that level, they need to go to 100,000 kilometer per year. Currently, we are in that regime. We are currently have 2,000. I'm expecting with fusion, we will get within 5 years into 10,000 per year. And we need to go to 20,000. We need the new application. Fusion is not going to deliver in the short term the 20,000 plus. We need another application to provide, and the power and energy application is the ideal one. Superconducting for magnetic separation, industrial application, it showed that you can use it in, this is in Amazon, this is really a magnet separation device installed in the Amazon rainforest. And this is really for any mine to do all the paints in your rooms. Has to be using a clay material, which is coming out from certain mines in Cornwall, in Australia, and in Brazil, and they are using magnetic separation to get these materials. But this is a harsh environment, and this is, although it's using a cryogenic system, it's still a harsh environment, but it shows the cryogenic can operate in industrial and in harsh environment. Very exciting about transport. Japan has already committed to two trains completely superconducting and up to 500 kilometer with total cost of 555 billion, all operating at 4K niobium. They couldn't, because this has to be operating at all time, they couldn't experiment with HTS. China is planning to do another one, and they are promising to have one 2030 by using HTS. But this is again exciting times for superconducting technologies. And here I'm talking about the electric planes. There's, if you think on the right-hand side with the current technologies, the CO2 emission will be double using the current planes. So currently there's serious effort by Boeing, by Eurobus here, by Airbus and by NASA to develop electric planes. Airbus has committed to deliver an electric plane using liquid hydrogen and superconducting technologies by 2035. UK is committing to deliver electric plane using hydrogen by 2030, and there are already some small planes running on batteries. This is an Airbus project, which is going to rely on superconducting materials. And it show here, I'm showing here that currently there are over 23,000 planes in the world. The needs by 2038, almost 50,000, 40,000 of these are needed. And a big chunk of these new ones going to be electric, otherwise the decarbonization target will not be achieved. And that's a massive amount of activity in the electrification program. And that's going to be a driver for superconducting technologies, either in cables, generators, motors, energy storage, and propulsion. To conclude, the expected emerging market to be fusion electric planes. I think they will be, we will start to see in 3-4 years more results coming out on commercial products with a realization by 2030. There's a large, huge potential for power and energy application for grid distribution and power conditioning to integrate all these large number of renewables will be requiring superconducting technology. We have big opportunities in superconducting quantum computing and devices, medical diagnostics, industrial and transport. So what, just to finish, we need a new thinking on developing superconducting products. Currently, relying on the current business model is going to be slow and not really effective in addressing our future needs for either decarbonization or quality, quality of life, health, and the environment and the climate challenges. And this new thinking, we are developing a new initiative to have a partnership between the big industrials and the superconducting community and the government and private funding to establish a step change in level of awareness and funding of these products, not into the research and development, but also in realizing these products instead of doing over 5 to 7 years, how we can bring them much shorter than that. So we are developing initiative now where we are aiming to establish working group to work with the various bodies in the big industrials and the government and the community to establish roadmaps and identify the challenges that we can make a difference to address the needs of the next decade. Such an initiative will be seeking to enhance the superconducting market. And the future for superconducting will be really very bright based on our society needs and future aspiration. And thank you.
Thank you, Ziad, for that super comprehensive talk. I didn't realize how many different applications there were beyond just the ones that, you know, we typically think about on a day-to-day level. This is very exciting, and I hope that the market is able to keep up, that the suppliers with the demand that's going to be coming. I'd like to open it up to questions if there are any. Keep in mind we've been using the raise hand feature, so if somebody has any questions, you can raise your hand and go ahead and unmute yourself. While people are thinking about their questions, I actually had a kind of technology question. You mentioned that one of the challenges with continuing the use of superconductivity is the limited availability of helium. And as we move into higher temperature regimes, do you suspect that this is going to be driven by alternative cryogens, or is it going to be more of cryocooler and recycling type of technology?
That's a good question. It has to be driven by other cryogen. If we can achieve operation at the liquid nitrogen 65 plus to 77, that will make a step change, because getting access to liquid nitrogen is much easier. And there's a large capability of producing liquid nitrogen, and it's cheap. So if you imagine the cost of if you want to buy a liter of helium, you should budget, if you are not in a leisure facility, $15 to $25 per liter. Yeah. For liquid nitrogen, you have to budget 20 cent to 50 cent.
So it's 100-fold.
So imagine that if you can manage to get this performance. Now, high temperature superconductors can offer performance at liquid nitrogen. Transmission lines is an example. For transmission lines, you don't need more than liquid nitrogen. So for low field, you might need to go at above 40K. Currently, fusion devices are running at 20 Kelvin, and they are proposing to you, one of the proposers use liquid hydrogen, and so the electric plane are using liquid hydrogen. So at the moment, the liquid hydrogen is not really suited really for safe operation with the current technologies, but doesn't mean that it's not. I think within 5-6 years, there would be development to make them really acceptable as engineering material. So my expectation that it will happen because the interest in that performance is enormous. So HTS material now at 20K provide 20 to 25 Tesla. So the fusion device done by the TF coil done by the CFS at MIT achieve 24 Tesla at 20K, which is enormous. So that's excellent performance. So definite electric planes and fusion devices will be running at 20 Kelvin. They will, I don't see them running using helium because it still would be expensive, but using liquid hydrogen is a viable option. Need to be engineered, but it's a viable option. But more importantly now, you can use cryo coolers. One stage cryo cooler can take you between 30K to 40K. And the cost is much significantly lower than two-stage cryo cooler. So you talk about 5K system versus 30K system, factor of six. So I think for power application, my expectation that you will start to see, because they, some of them will need medium field, they don't need high field. Apart from SMES, all of the application will require low field. So I'm expecting they will be either running liquid hydrogen if it's demonstrated successfully in electric plane fusion, but also even completely cryogen free system using mechanical coolers running at 5K. And I'm confident as soon as you start scale up these cryo coolers, the price will go down. It's a catch 22. So the first generation of any product will be expensive. But as soon as you go into the 1,000 plus manufacturing, the cost will go down with the scale of economy. So my expectation, you will start to see the power application either running at high operating cryogens like liquid hydrogen. If you can manage to go to liquid nitrogen, I'm not expecting to see that before 2030. You can see it on the transmission lines, but the materials has to improve significantly to allow us to go to that level. And then operating at 40K is the best option, which is providing mechanical cryo coolers running and portable. The other important thing, these are portable. If you're having one potential applications to have it on a plane or in on a truck, you're running at 40K, you're completely independent. So these are the opportunities. Substations will be relying on that, like fourth current limiter and so on. So my expectation that's where we'll be running, basically using a new cryogen, and that will really make it easier.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's definitely dependent on the scale and the type of technology that's needed. High field, high temperature versus low field, high temperature has different needs. I see that Luciano, you have a question.
Yes, thank you. So like I wanted to echo Melanie about the many application of the superconductivity. Thank you for the overview. And I have a question about a specific application, which is the wind turbine. You mentioned wind turbine possibility of using superconductive. And I was wondering if you can say a word or two about the different difference that is in the engine, the motor, and the generator for the wind turbine. Is it just the same engine with superconductive cable, or is there some technological difference as nowadays?
Yeah, it's no. It's simply, instead of using the motor using copper coils, you can use superconducting coils. That will reduce really the size and the performance. You get more torque, more power out of a smaller device. If you look at side, I can show you here. So if you look at this here, this is a permanent magnet device. Can you see that? And this is superconducting. Can you see it? So what they have done in the EcoSwing system, they take an existing wind farm, they replaced the device inside the turbine from this permanent magnet to a superconducting. And to get the same performance, it was smaller by 40%. So it's exactly the same technique, but using superconducting wire instead of using permanent magnets or copper coils.
So there is no different technology in the motor.
No. This is the only thing they require. The only thing is cryogenic. So what they have done, they put 7 cryocoolers on that thing. I mean, that's amazing. They put seven of these. Can you see that? This is a Sumitomo cooler, 25 kilogram each. They put 7 of them. And it worked. And for 6 months, it was connected to the grid successfully. So that's what the objective. And really, the next stage is to scale up into devices for commercialization, but need funding.
Thank you.